So yesterday we started the mystery of what is the intent of the Gemara when it throws in Ataros Vidivon as a condition or as a inclusion. It's hard to know exactly what it's best characterized as, but the point is that don't think you can get away without doing Ataros Vidivon. And we noted that the Rishonim seem to sharply disagree as to its intent, and there's more to the disagreement than meets the eye, because in terms of interpreting the Gemara, there's a lot to unpack about what it leaves unsaid and what could be left unsaid, essentially. So we just to quickly recap what we said yesterday, that essentially you could ask the question fundamentally and proactively, and you could also ask the question in terms of understanding what the Gemara is trying to get at. You could ask, what does the Gemara want from us? What does Chazal want from us when it says Targum? And therefore, what would happen if a Pasuk doesn't have much to offer in way of Targum, or have much to need in way of Targum? And that would be a question you would have, even if the Gemara had said nothing about Ataros Vidivon. So that's something that needs to be asked on its own. And that goes back to the question of, is there a takana to read three times? And just once we're at it, let's read it Targum also, because we might as well understand it better. Or is it that there is a notion of reading it twice, like the Rav Yoh said, Beis Lahodia Chashivuso. And then there's a separate idea that we should also do Targum, maybe because Targum is Tzayin Edik on some level, maybe for a different reason. But then, if a Pasuk doesn't have Targum, whatever that reason might be, either because Targum doesn't exist, or because there's no need for Targum, or something else, so then what would that mean? Maybe would that mean skip it or not? So that's the question. And then how do you understand Ataros Vidivon? So Rashi understood Ataros Vidivon as an example of something there's no Targum. And therefore that would include something like Reuven and Shimon, anything where there's no Targum. And by the way, parenthetically, Reuven and Shimon was the other reason we mentioned that Shmos is a good parsha to talk about Shnai Mikra. So one was because of the Reshit Tevis, but the other is because the whole question of how to treat those opening psukim of Shmos vis-a-vis the halacha of Shnai Mikra. So that's a double whammy as to why it's a apropos time to get involved in that whole sugya. So according to Rashi, it would seem like Reuven and Shimon and Ataros Vidivon have the same halacha, that they are both psukim that have no Targum, and you have to do it anyway. Well, what does it mean if there's no Targum? So presumably it means read it three times, and just read it as is, or read it with the Targum, which is not adding anything, but still read that Targum. Now, you'd have the question, presumably, okay, well then, why give the show-offy example of Ataros Vidivon, why not just say Reuven and Shimon? So it could be, according to Rashi, there is still an extra chiddush in Ataros Vidivon, but presumably it still is the same din. Whatever the din is for Reuven and Shimon is the same din for Ataros Vidivon, but maybe Ataros Vidivon is more of a havmini, would have thought otherwise, and nonetheless, that's still the din. And that's something which we could look at a little bit more today. So Tosfos disagrees, and Tosfos notes on two levels. First of all, if the Gemara wanted to just say something that has no Targum, Reuven and Shimon is a better example. So why? There must be a bigger chiddush, a different chiddush, in looking to Ataros Vidivon. Second of all, Ataros Vidivon, it's just not true that there is no Targum at all. And the language of Tosfos here was that Mikol Makom Targum Yerushalmi Hayilo, right? That there is a Targum Yerushalmi. So Afagav Shein Bo Targum Yadua El Targum Yerushalmi V'Tzarech Likros Gimel Pamim HaEvri Mikol Makom Yoser Tov, Likros Pam Shlishus B'Targum. So even though it doesn't have such a well-known Targum, there is this Targum Yerushalmi that's available, and it is better to do that. I mentioned the other day that and if you look in our unklus, this does appear. Machlalta Malbesh does appear in our unklus, which raises some questions as to whether our unklus is authentic or not, and could be the possibility that it's mostly authentic, but that when you have something like this, that the Yushalmi adds that maybe this has been brought in. But either way, so our unklus does have this, and maybe that's talk of the point, that when there is something that another Targum adds specifically, maybe that's like what Tosus is saying, so better to go look for that and to bring it in. But the point seems to be a dual point. So the point is, therefore, this Gemara is not telling you something about Reuben and Shimon, it's telling you something specific about a pasuk like a Taurus V'divon, where you could gain something from a Targum, and therefore you should make that extra effort to get that Targum, which isn't in our standard Targum, and therefore it's telling you a different chiddush about the pasuk Taurus V'divon. So double disagreement with Rashi in terms of the practical implications. A different chiddush vis-a-vis a Taurus V'divon, and a different position vis-a-vis Reuven v'Shimon. So what is the din about Reuven v'Shimon? Apparently Reuven v'Shimon doesn't necessarily have the same status as far as Shnayim Mikra, but what does that mean? So there you see, in terms of the Rush and Reuven Yonah, so that could mean no Targum, but still Shnayim Shlosha Mikra, because there's still a Tekana of three. Although, you could argue, without necessarily basing it in the Rishonim, that Chazal don't say that. Chazal say Shnayim Mikra ve'echad Targum. So to say you should read it three times in Hebrew seems a little bit like it's without a source. But maybe it's a self-evident kind of suggestion, although it's one that the Rishonim did seem to question. And the other possibility is to say that there is simply no obligation of Targum on that pasuk. Yeah.
Could it kind of be said that if there is, meaning, so like there's words obviously like in like languages that don't really get translated to our languages, they would kind of just you know, copy the word, like, you know, if I'm talking about a crepe, I say crepe, even though it's probably the same in French, for example, came to mind.
Yeah.
But that's an English translation of crepe is crepe. So even so, if there's no translation, that means that the word is the same in a different language, therefore we shouldn't have to translate it.
That's the point, right? We're seeing that these are things, the names that seem to be no different in translation. So Paris is Paris, as they say, you know. So therefore, maybe there's no point in having a translation. So that's the question. So
not even that is a translation. That
right.
Ruvain in English is still Ruvain.
Right. So there's also the possibility that it's actually worse than a translation, because since these were names that were changed, that's how some suggest, and that it actually tells you less. These were the old names, and they were, so that's now some of the Achronim who give different interpretations than the Rishonim. I started to mention yesterday that the Achronim essentially start from scratch in explaining this Gemara, which is also noteworthy. So some point out that these were Machlalta, Malbeshta, these were the old names of these cities that apparently were changed. So first of all, that may be a halachic issue because they were names of Avodah Zarah. So maybe that's a reason Davka not to say them. That's how some suggest. The Taz discusses that when it comes to Reuven and Shimon, so these are the names of the Shiftei Kah, so okay, it's Pashut that those have Kedusha, so you know that we don't have to question. But maybe it's more of a Chiddush that even these Avodah Zarah Dika cities, it's worth saying in Targum, or it's worth saying a third time. Others point to a Gemara in Sanhedrin that maybe there could have been an Isser involved, while still others point to the fact that there is a maybe negative translation involved here, that it's just telling you less than you know. To be, if I were to refer to Istanbul as Constantinople, it's not going to tell you anything. If I were to refer to New York City as New Amsterdam, So that's not going to help you. That's going to confuse you more. So it's not going to tell you anything more than you know. It's going to tell you less than you know. So to translate in a way that just brings something back to its older usage is maybe a reverse kind of targum. And maybe that's why you maybe would have thought not that way. So there are a number of interesting suggestions. Perhaps the most surprising and somewhat controversial is the unusually phrased interpretation in the Torah Tamima. So the Torah Tamima essentially says, the way it strikes you on first reading, that this pasuk, Ataras V'divon, which appears in Parshas Matos, if you looked it up inside, which I think I put on the list to do, but otherwise I hope you thought of doing. So this is unique among the psukim of the Torah, that you could leave it out and it wouldn't matter. So that may strike you as heretical, and that sounds a little strange. So what is going on with that? And if I recall correctly, there was a Talmid Chacham who passed away recently, Rabbi Alter Usher Blau, who was a Chavrus of Rabbi Chalap. He wrote a sefer called Efne V'Eshne, and he had a whole chapter devoted to explaining this Torah Tamima. And also, my grandfather in his commentary to the Torah Tamima, the Meshuvas Nefesh, so he explains that if you want to understand what the Torah Tamima is getting at, so you should look in the back of the Gemara at the commentary of Reb Lazar Moshe Hurwitz, which is a good place to look at in terms of understanding the Torah Tamima's commentary, especially here, but in general, because he happened to have been the Torah Tamima's father-in-law. So it's a good likelihood that he influenced his interpretation here. So what did he say? So he explained that essentially what he's getting at is like this, that there's a difference between Ataras V'Divon and Reuven and Shimon in the beginning of Parshas Shmos, because yes, it's true that the specific words Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, there's nothing in the Targum that's going to add anything to your understanding of those words. But you're still going to have to read them, because if you start reading the beginning of Parshas Shmos, and you start in the Aramaic, so it's because of Ve'ilan, Shmas, B'nai Yisrael, right? These are the names. And then you're not going to say any names. So it's not going to make any sense. So the context is going to force you to recite those psukim. But there's one pasuk, apparently, in all of Chumash, where the Targum doesn't add anything, and the context doesn't force you to also read those words in order for it to make sense. So you could have thought that you could have left that pasuk out of the Targum, and the Chiddush the Gemara is that no, that pasuk too, you also have to include. And then my grandfather went on to explain, okay, so you have to understand then, so why is that the case? So if you looked at what's going on there, so this is where the B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven are saying that there is a area there that is ripe for grazing our animals, and we want to take over those cities. So apparently they didn't just say there's a place, but they pointed and named those cities. So that was a part of their whole argument. So this is connected to the previous pasuk in a similar fashion to Ve'elish Mos B'nai Yisrael. Those are the city, even though it's not as clear that the previous pasuk is saying those are the cities, but that was essentially their argument. So this is connected to the previous pasuk in a less obvious but similar way to Ve'elish Mos B'nai Yisrael. And indeed, he says that is the only pasuk b'chol ha'mikra that fits such a havamina, and That's the most common. Now, this kind of segues us into a different point, because that whole answer is making a certain assumption about how Shnayim Mikra is done. What am I getting at?
Read the Targum all at once or after each pasuk.
Okay, exactly, yes. So there is a discussion which the Magen Avraham and others bring up, the question of how to do Shnayim Mikra. So should it be pasuk pasuk, or should it be parsha parsha? And when we say parsha parsha, we don't mean tazria tazria, but we mean parsha as in the sections in the Chumash. So we mean a much smaller section. But should it be the parsha first, the entire parsha, and then the Targum, or should it be one pasuk at a time? So this answer, this explanation, is clearly assuming that you're doing a whole parsha at once, and that's why the context would have forced you to read Reuven and Shimon as well. If you're just doing one pasuk at a time, so then that's not necessarily the case. You could just read each pasuk by itself, and then that wouldn't force you. So there are various attitudes about this, and we'll say a little bit about this now, and we'll also say a little bit more about this tomorrow. We probably should note now and tomorrow that there are a number of points in Hilchos Shnayim Mikra Beecha Targum about which there are machlokes and preferences and issues. I would mention as a general guideline that this is a obligation that many of us find difficult to complete, and that it is, at the end of the day, or at the end of the week, a obligation midrabanan, so probably is not kedai to take the most difficult positions and assume l'chumra, probably to focus on that which is most conducive to A, getting it done, and getting it done in the most beneficial way to your learning and to your understanding of the parsha. So we'll mention today and tomorrow some of these positions that are expressed, but again, as far as what you should do, I think that that's a reasonable attitude to take, and these positions notwithstanding. So there is, in general, a question as to how it should be done. The Chazon Ish maintained his personal practice that it should be pasuk pasuk, and the way he did it was pasuk targum pasuk, because the way he understood it to be was that it should be read the pasuk and then read the targum, so that that would enhance your understanding of the pasuk, and then read the pasuk again now that you understand it better having read it with the targum. That would be the proper way to do it. Theoretically, one could do that also parsha targum parsha, but the idea would be then having the targum in the middle. There is a discussion about this also in the Tshuva Shevet HaKahasi, by Rav Shammai Kahas Gross, one of the Dayanim and Bells, where he brought up the issue of if somebody only has time to do two out of the three now, and is going to have to separate two and one, so should he do two mikras and a targum separately, or do mikra targum and do a mikra separately? And he noted, presumably it makes sense to keep a targum connected to a mikra, and to do a mikra separately. There is also an interesting discussion in Poskim about whether the halacha should be different for specifically the pasuk of Kriyat Shema. Rav Kook has a truth about this, and also the Rivas Ephraim has a discussion about this, that the Mishnah says that Ha'omer Shema Shema Mishaskin, so if somebody says Shema twice, so we quiet him down. We tell him not to do that, because mechsek yishtei rishuyas. It looks as if he is davening, he's accepting two gods. So is that a problem in the context of Shnayim Mikra to read the pasuk twice? Is that going to create a problem? So there were those who were choshish to that. I think Rav Kook, if I remember correctly, said actually that davka there, you shouldn't do a pasuk-pasuk in order to avoid that appearance. Others suggested that the whole issue was only Derech Kabbalah, although you have to understand what that means, because presumably if somebody is actually being mekabel to God, so then we understand that that's not something we need a special din to tell us not to do, although presumably it means somewhere in between, that you're not actually being mekabel to gods, but just when you're actually being mekabel one God, to say it twice is what's machzik yishtei rishuyus, and therefore we don't recommend that. But if one is doing it darich limud and darich shnayim v'kribeach l'targum, so then that's not going to create a problem. Hi.
Why is it the pasuk that singled out when it mamish as Hashem Echad?
I mean, you think that that word itself would be an indication that that's not going to...
Yeah, I mean, like, this, the, like, for this other, like, any mention of Hashem in any context would seem to be more specifically trying to mention two gods. And then...
It's a good question. It's a question on the mission, though. It's not a question on this discussion, because...
Yeah,
it's an interesting question. You think that the context itself makes it quite clear.
Seems like the most, the least problematic possible word. Like being upset, but
I hear.
That seems like I'm mentioning two different.
I hear your point. Your point is well taken. It's a question on the mission. It's not a question on this discussion, but it's an interesting point. The point is well taken. So that's an important issue. So that's a sub-detail of this question of whether it should be done pasuk pasuk or parsha parsha. So here again, this is the issue that the Magen Avraham brings up, and there are different tanhagos, but the question is an issue where I think it's safe to say, certainly as far as this is concerned, that elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, and that one should consider both what is most conducive to him, getting it done, and also, as the Chazanish emphasized, to enhancing his understanding and the limud that comes from it, and that is somewhat of a personal decision, but those two factors should be prioritized in making the decision, and that should guide your path here. So there are a number of other considerations. So one of the other overarching issues is how much this is seen as Limud HaTorah and how much this is seen as a recitation. And this is something that we'll have to expand on a little bit more tomorrow. But just to dip our toe into it a little bit, so, for example, there is a discussion many of the Rishonim took up, and Rav Avadya Yosef has a long tshuva about whether we should allow an Avel and Shiva to do Shnayim Ekraviach HaTargim. So, being that an Avel is prohibited in Talmud Torah, but there are certain things that are technically Torah, Psukim, that an Avel does do because they're considered Chovas Sayom. So an Avel does recite Kriya Shema and does recite Karbanos, so can he also do Shnayim Ekra? Hi.
Can an Avel get around that by doing it on Shabbat? Does that change anything?
That doesn't change anything as far as that's concerned, but the question is, should we look at it as more of a Chovas Hayom? So some of the Rishonim already took up this issue, and Rebbe Avadya has a long tshuva about this, and many are inclined to be mekel, to see it as more of a Chovas Hayom, rather than to allow it during Avelis, and not see it as a Talmud Torah specific kind of involvement. Question about that?
Yeah, we discussed earlier, I think, when it came to like Shema Amar, like that Mekel Timtu would see it. We discussed it, but it would make more sense to be Mekel to not be a Chiv.
Yeah, so I mean to allow this during Avelis and not to see this as prohibited Talmud Torah during that time. Rav Kook has a tshuva where he took a different view, because here, now you want to talk about what's considered a kula, what's considered a chumra halachically. So, and this is something we'll also expand on a little bit tomorrow. So what happens, we know that our Gemara took up the topic of how we're supposed to be in sync with the tzibur, and therefore the Gemara said that it wasn't a good idea to try to get everything done in advance, or maybe it wasn't valid to try to get everything done in advance, because it's supposed to be done with a tzibur. So what happens if you miss it? what happens if the week is over. So is it a kula or a chumrah to say there's an opportunity to do it later? So I think many would like to say, what can you do? Avrizmano batal karbano, and try again next year. But there is the position of Rabbeinu Simcha that it can be made up until the end of the cycle, which is presumably why that day is called Simchas Torah, because it's named after him. He's the one who enables you to make up the rest of the missing Shnei Mikras until that time. Now, there is a particularly interesting question of how exactly that should be done in terms of the order. And that was a machlokas to Marsham and Vizchuk Zilberstein, which we'll get into a little bit more tomorrow. But Rav Kook pointed to that possibility, the idea that it could be made up later, and said, therefore, since that is an option, so he thought that an Avel shouldn't do Shnei Mikra, and he didn't see it as a Chovas Hayom. But that gets into this question a little bit of, is it looked at as a pure Talmud Torah pursuit, or does it take on the status of something more of a recitation? And what possible nafkaminas would that have? And that we will, Be'ez Hashem, pick up with tomorrow. Yeah.